SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hour number three officially underway. 2 hours down, one more to go. Make sure you keep it locked and loaded on SiriusXM channel 159 on the Sports Grid Network. And away we go. It's Donnie Wrightside. It's Joe and Aaron. By the way, how are the vibes for you, Joe, right now? 2 hours in? Feel like we can go another two? I mean, what are the vibes over there?
Oh, no, I'm feeling good. I could just stay here and even do Kevin Walsh's show coming up. I'm ready to roll here, man. Ready to roll.
Yeah, you can't. Well, we're going to fly you up there to the Kevin Walsh Memorial Studios in Homedale. It's a beautiful plaque in there, a statue being erected outside of Bell Works. Fantastic stuff all the way around from those studios, which were built basically for Kevin. You like the house for that him. Was built? I believe that's how we figure it here in Homedale, New Jersey. But let's get back to the hot topics here that we were going over. And reaching out to the people is what we love to do. At Sports Grid TV here on X, and it was a question of the Final Four. That question here being, will all of the number one seeds make it to the 2024 Final Four? No, 82.9%, which just increased to 83.2%. Yes, at 16.8%. Now, granted, they're probably going to be the favorites to move on. Great basketball teams still to play a few more games before we get to the Final Four. But just lining this up for myself, I did vote no. I'm part of that 83% group because, number one, if you're a number one seed, you're supposed to be the best in your region. We know it doesn't always work out like that. And quite frankly, it feels like it's sometimes impossible to get all four number one seeds in here to factor in to the Final Four. Would I like to see it from a TV perspective? Absolutely. From a betting perspective, probably not so much as we welcome in the radio audience you're watching and listening live to a Tuesday morning edition of The Early Line right here on SiriusXM channel 159 on the Sports Grid Network. He's Joe Ranieri. I'm Donnie Wrightside. Once again, Joe, your vote in this and your thought process moving forward to next weekend's Final Four.
Yeah, I would disagree with the over 80% that don't think this is going to happen, because the question I would pose to them is, how shocked would you be if it did? And if your answer is, I wouldn't be that shocked, then there is no way this is more than 80% chance of not happening. So I do think, listen, the four number ones right now to me are still, if you put it in order here, guys, they're the four best teams left in the tournament. So really what you're asking, would the four best teams left in the tournament make it to the Final Four? I think we're a lot closer to 50-50 than 80-20 here. I would not be shocked if all four number ones battled. And I think you nailed it. That might be the best couple of games that we get the entire tournament if that's how it ends up.
If we're taking a look at, and you can battle in the scenario with the FanDuel Sportsbook, UConn to reach the Final Four, -230 price. The Houston Cougars to reach the Final Four, +100. Purdue Boilermakers, +120, along with the Tar Heels at a +180 price. Let's have some fun with this, too. If I gave you those four teams, and let's just say, Joe, three are going to make it into the Final Four, your bet for a team not to reach the Final Four, of those four, who would it be?
That's tough here. I would say right now, my feelings would be that I do think if Houston has a hard time, if they emptied the gas tanks in that game against Texas A&M, Houston could be in trouble, especially coming out of that side of the bracket. So I gotta see a little something from them early and often, like we usually do, because that was, that sometimes would take teams out of rhythm, doing what they had to do there against all of that. And having a kid who hasn't played 7 minutes of basketball in 3 years at Houston have to win it for you off the bench. It's either going to be the greatest thing that ever happened to Houston and they're going to build him a shrine, or it's going to go down as maybe the one game that maybe Buzz Williams and company ended up taking out Houston when it mattered the most, even though they didn't win.
I I agree with you on Houston. Now, granted, I have a Houston ticket here because I'm hoping that UConn does get knocked out. But when you look at the pathway forward, you say, well, Donnie, Houston's facing a four seed. That's much better than, you know, maybe another four seed they might have. And you told me you didn't like Duke. Well, things do change when you get to the tournament. Duke's playing great basketball here, and that's a tough matchup. So then when you do win that, you're expected to probably get, let's just say, Marquette on the opposite side. That's two tough games before you move on. Now, granted, each one of these one seeds is going to have two tough games before they move on. But you know, I put number two, like, I actually like Carolina to get to the Final Four now from what I see, even though Arizona could be in their way. I think it's a pretty good matchup for UNC. On the flip side, Purdue is playing great basketball right now, and maybe that path is a little bit easier. And quite frankly, before the tournament brackets came out, you're like, ooh, I don't know about Purdue. The brackets come out like, whoa, Purdue might have the best run to the Final Four out of any number one seed. So I bring up the number two most vulnerable team. I still think it's UConn because I think they have a very tough game against San Diego State, which I do think they win. But the winner of Illinois and Iowa State is going to be a great matchup going up against UConn. So if I had to put it in order, I do think, as much as I hate to say, Houston probably has the toughest run. Number two for me is UConn. How do you feel about some of the other teams here and what you would put like a 1-2 or maybe a standing order of who do you think gets knocked out after Houston for you, Joe?
Well, here's the deal. I think we're going to learn this week, right, in the Sweet 16, if teams are for real. In other words, I am not convinced, even though it's the second highest odds, I'm not convinced Arizona gets past Clemson. I'm not, you know, and again, we just talked about Houston going up against Duke here, Donnie. I mean, we've got, I will be shown something. If both of these teams win and win convincingly and cover, and I think Arizona's what, 7.5 point favorite, something along those lines. If they win, cover that, because I think Clemson is going to give them hell. And I would not be shocked if Arizona loses this game against Clemson. Then I'd have to reconsider this by the time we get to the Elite Eight on what I think about all four number one seeds getting there.
I was going to ask you that question next, too, and that you already answered it there, would be like Clemson would be the shocker of this weekend's games. Like, ooh, I didn't see that one coming. And again, if you are taking a look at some of the bracket madness that we've been setting up, most people in office brackets here, probably 80% have UConn cutting down the net. So usually to win an office, we're like, well, who's everybody going to have? I got to be a little bit contrarian. So I'm also on that side. It's the reason why I picked one of my futures as Houston to win. I also have a pick ticket on Creighton as well to go along with it. And then also my other team is Iowa State, which I think hopefully – I was hoping Iowa State didn't even have to play UConn as moving forward. But that contrarian value where – by the way, in your pools or contention, did you pick UConn in your pool, Joe? And do you have a future on UConn winning it before the tournament started or no?
Yeah, half of them. So half were North Carolina. I had a couple on North Carolina, a couple on Houston, a couple on the UConn. I had to put UConn in there. It's a good chance they do win it after all. We're just hoping.
Joe, I was trying to explain to people before the tournament, and I know it doesn't make a lot of sense. I think Houston's the best team. I think they win it all, but I'm not going to pick them because of the price point. It sort of makes sense. Right. It sort of doesn't make sense, but that's the mentality of somebody trying to win a bigger ticket and for a bigger prize here. Major League Baseball opening day Thursday. Does anybody know what's coming? Craig Mitch does. We'll talk about it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rolling along in hour number three right here on the Early Line, SiriusXM Channel 159 on the Sports Grid Network. I'm Donnie Wrightside. He's Joe Ranieri. And we welcome in Major League Baseball insider right here on the grid. It's Craig Mish. We got opening day on Thursday. The anticipation, Craig. Let's get it going.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'll be at the Marlins-Pirates game on Thursday, so that'll be the first baseball game that I go to, regular season game that I go to this season. I'm all ready for that. But, you know, I think naturally baseball's done a really good job, set some really good matchups, I think, for opening weekend. And, yeah, I mean, it all begins on Thursday, 162 games. People forget how long the baseball season is, and I can't wait for it to get going.
Thursday afternoon in Philadelphia, Craig. I can't wait for it either. Spencer Strider going up against Zach Wheeler, toe-to-toe, Braves and the Phillies. But before we get there, I don't think Major League Baseball likes this story to hype up opening day. Shohei Ohtani in the news, not for being an MVP, not for being a 700 millionaire here at this point. It's questions about him, his interpreter, and the gambling space here. What do you know about what's going on in Major League Baseball right now, Craig, with the Ohtani situation?
Well, look, there's a couple of different things. I could say, you know, first and foremost, the one thing that I can speak to is from a PR standpoint and from the way that this is handled, I can, from experience in covering sports, say that I think that this has not been the best look and not been the best job of handling that. Now, as far as what is actually going on with Ohtani and his interpreter and whether or not everything that he's saying is accurate and true, I really have no idea. There are some people, some translators that I've seen and some former players who are sort of rushing to Ohtani's defense saying it's not unreasonable to think that the interpreter had access to all of his banking accounts and everything going on and, you know, wiring this money back and forth. They're saying it's not an unreasonable ask, but it does seem a little bizarre in the amounts that these are just simply not being paid attention to. And I think in our daily life, no matter what financial scope we're on, whether you know, we looked at our accounts. I mean, we all have bank accounts. Maybe we don't check them every single second of every day. But if we saw $500 or $1,000 or $10,000 going to an odd account, I mean, I think it would raise a red flag for all of us here. That part is kind of hard to believe. But at the same time, Major League Baseball will do their investigation, and then the truth will come out in the end. Whether Ohtani is telling the truth or not still remains to be seen. But I will say there are a lot of people that are rushing to Ohtani's defense saying that his story is indeed believable just because of the relationship with translators and players who are playing in the United States. It does seem to be pretty common that those people would have access to the players' financial accounts.
Well, there's so many things that's why they let everyone talk to begin with is beyond me. I'm with you. I think this could not have been handled any worse than what they did. But what kind of effect early on does this have on Ohtani, the Dodgers, what this hanging over the head? And it doesn't sound like it's going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, Joe, I don't know that this story is going to go on and on and on. I think, Joe, your take is correct. And I think as people who have done this, and Joe, you've been doing this forever too, like the initial prisoner of the moment thought is, oh my gosh, this is going to go on forever. And then it ends. And then the next story happens. You know, there's a basketball player on a 10-day contract who potentially, allegedly, is, you know, doing some salacious things. And then we're on to that story. That story's not going to go away anytime soon. And then it does. And then the next story happens. Yep. You know, so I look, if there was a situation for this to happen to where it could go away quickly, guys, let's be real. It would be with the Dodgers. Honestly, if Ohtani wasn't on the Dodgers, what would their season win total projection be? 98? 99? Like, they're still going to be a really good team anyway. I think Ohtani in the end will be fine. I think the Dodgers will be fine. But again, that's pending this investigation. If baseball finds anything different from what we're talking about here, then, Joe, in that point, yeah, it would be a completely different conversation.
Yeah. Talking about storylines not going away anywhere, that's the Atlanta Braves and how good they've been in Major League Baseball, quite frankly, for the past 25 to 30 years. But you know what? Getting you ready for opening day is very important, and Craig Mish does that with the best of them. Let's take a look at a clip here with Alex Anthopoulos, the GM and president of baseball operations for the Braves, and their outlook on this season.
The quick additions, I guess, that you made to the team offensively were the move to get Jared Kelenic, and then late in the spring, getting Adam Duvall. But top to bottom, this is the strength of the Braves, I would say, going into the season. Would you agree, based off what you saw last year, this year in the spring?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, it was a historic offense in terms of home run totals and runs scored and slugging percentages and things like that. So largely the group comes back. Now, some guys had obviously incredible seasons, MVP seasons and so on, and all-stars seasons. We had 8 all-stars last year, 6 on the position player side. So, you know, to expect everybody to repeat that, that's probably not fair. But the talent is certainly there to have a strong offensive club again.
Craig, in my mind, the best overall general manager in baseball is Alex Anthopoulos, and the Braves every single year, one of those teams that you expect to win a pennant and or get to the World Series with a chance to win it. We take a look at them this season, the win total over 100 wins. It actually comes in at 101.5 to win the NL East, a heavy favorite at minus 280 against a very good Philadelphia Phillies team. The pennant listed at plus 250 in the World Series at a plus 450 price. Let me ask you this, the outlook on this season, but also the Braves' MO, identifying young talent, signing them, and quite frankly, it seems like it always works out for them. Genius.
Yeah, and look, I think the one thing that's also important to mention here is the fact that, you know, that Alex has a lot of good people working for him, too. Like, this isn't, you know, a one-man organization. It's not the way that baseball works. In fact, he has an assistant general manager named Ben Sestanovich, who interviewed for the general manager position of the Marlins last year, too. Inevitably, the Marlins hired Peter Bendix there, but that's another name to keep in mind for the future. I think he's going to be a GM in the next year or two somewhere. So there's a lot of, you know, high-fiving to go around with Atlanta. Now, in terms of the topic of their season win total in their future, I mean, you could easily see the Braves having the best record in baseball this year. There's no question about it if their pitching stays healthy. You know, Chris Sale is going to have to be a big part of that, I think, going into the year, because he'll replace some of the other starting pitchers that pitched for them at the end of last season. But in order for the Braves to go further than they have, Donnie, I think it's fair to say that, you know, every good president, every general manager sort of has to take a look at their tactics at the end of the season and how they handle things. And I don't know what the change will be, but I would assume, guys, the Braves are going to have to change something up, whether this would be acquiring more players at the trade deadline, which would be maybe playing harder at the end of the season in case you have a bye, so you don't have to sort of worry about what could potentially come in an early exit in the postseason. So I would guess the Braves will change the strategy up a little bit this year to make a deeper push into the postseason.
So I got to ask you, as long as I have you there, because I'm this close to putting the bet in on the Miami win total here, Craig, and I am deathly scared of the pitching and the injuries. Perez, what's the latest on him? Alcantara's probably out into the near future. It just seems like everything is starting to pile up and a lot more questions than answers right now with this starting rotation of Miami. Plus, they went, what, 33-14 in one-run games last year? What, is there concern in the organization that the pitching will hold up?
Yeah, look, I think that is there, Joe. You know, here on Sports Grid, it is the only team in baseball that I generally don't talk about any betting with, whether it's the season win totals or the individual games, just because in covering the team, even though there are no rules, I'm just staying far away,
yes,
you know, from any discussion on it. But as far as the team is concerned, yeah, they had a lot of luck last year. They won a lot of one-run games. We're going to have the president of baseball operations, Peter Bendix, on the show on Newswire later today. So he'll give an update on Eury Pérez and sort of where things are at. But, you know, as far as their season is concerned, you know, they did make the postseason last year. I know they would love to make the postseason again this year. As you said, Joe, the injuries have piled up. And again, you know, Jorge Soler hit almost 40 home runs last year. They really did not replace him. So we're going to have to kind of see how the season progresses.
Yeah, Soler out to the Giants. I really like that move a lot. But if we're looking at the MVP markets, and again, just a hot topic here, we're looking at Ohtani at a plus 950 price at the FanDuel Sportsbook. If you were to place a wager on Ohtani, would you be worried about whether this hangs over his head or Major League Baseball stepping in with a, he's got to take some time away to figure things out here?
Yeah, Donnie, this is the easiest question to answer that you've asked me in the start of the interview. The great thing about legalized sports betting on FanDuel, DraftKings, or wherever you're betting is that you have opportunities everywhere else to make bets. Just stay away from this one. Do something else.
The opportunity to talk to Craig Mitch.
So true.
Priceless. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We got to talk some action in the NBA. There is four games tonight, but as you know, when we are on the Sports Grid Network, we are a live network, and when news breaks, we got to get to it, which includes the NFL, which apparently is trying to change the entire league landscape over these owner meetings. We brought to you multiple reasons for things changing in the NFL, rules and whatnot, plays that are going to change, but how about this? the trade deadline, Joe Ranieri, has now been bumped from week 8 into week 9, which means you have an extra week to try to evaluate your football team for that playoff push. I don't see any harm in this. And quite frankly, if you remember, as we date ourselves, Joe, growing up in the past, in the 80s and the 90s, no trades were ever made in the NFL because the trade deadline was basically 1 week after opening kickoff, it felt like. With the extension of the trade deadline, more action. I like this, Joe. What do you think?
Listen, I think any time you can give teams an opportunity, because anything can happen during the season, right, Donnie? So the more time you give teams to be able to improve, I don't see how fans would ever have a problem with this. I think giving them more leeway now to be able to improve a roster, just because you lose one guy or two guys, the ability to be able to maneuver and pivot, I think is a good thing for the sport overall.
How about that? The NFL changing every day. It's what we call it. It's a 365 league, man. Every single day, it seems like we're getting some new information in the draft coming up shortly. Free agency winding down. OTAs, training camp, kickoffs. Get ready. It's going to be an exciting season. And you know the Sports Grid Network has got you covered here. But also, Sports Grid Network covers you in the NBA. We always talk about the early line being the best show to handicap the NBA. Yesterday, went on another tear, Joe Ranieri, which included my best bet of the day, Domantas Sabonis, to record a triple double at a plus 210 price. That one cashed. But let's break down these four games tonight, which includes a big game, the Los Angeles Lakers taking on the Milwaukee Bucks. The overnight line, Joe, -5.5. The current line, -8.5 as a favorite for the Milwaukee Bucks. 232 is the total. Reason being, doubtful tag listed for LeBron James with an ankle injury. Let's say LeBron's out in this basketball game. Which way do we go here, Joe?
Yeah, I can't believe it. The Lakers are playing on the road. I didn't think they did that anymore because they were home for like 2 months. Unbelievable here. Yeah, listen, there's always those questionable tags at this particular point, especially with the Lakers. You know, Lakers need to rack up wins and they know it, Donnie here. So this is another one of these spots, middle of the week. Feels like this game means an awful lot more to the Lakers than it does to the Bucks. And I would expect the Bucks at home to do what they usually do in this spot against LeBron and company. And that's they'll show up here. That's why the line is 8, 8.5. I think maybe even the total might not be a bad look here.
Yeah, double digits. And by the way, these four games tonight, for only four games on the card, are tremendous. It's a shame that LeBron James isn't going to play in that game because the Bucks should win going away. The only question mark is, we know Giannis is probably going to play well. Is Dame going to score 11 points or 31 points in this game? Could be the differentiating parts of the outcome. But game number two, 10 o'clock tonight. We talked about these two teams early in the show, Joe. The Dallas Mavericks and the Sacramento Kings. How about this line? Opened up at -2, now sits at -1.5, a slight favorite to the Kings, who just downed the Sixers yesterday in a back-to-back. We take a look at the Dallas Mavericks, who you just saw play a basketball game. They head on the road to take on the Kings. Total in this game listed at 233. And as always, must check those starting lineups before the game because we on the early line are at a disadvantage trying to handicap who's actually going to play tonight. But let's just say the stars are out in full force, and quite frankly, they should be. This is a monster game between two teams fighting for that sixth seed.
Yeah, pretty easy win and cover there for Dallas last night, right? 115-105 over Utah. The Kings handled their business against the Sixers. Both teams are still trailing New Orleans and the Clippers. So love this game because this is going to feel like a playoff game, is it not, Donnie? There's going to be some juice in this game here. It's a pick 'em, and I'll say it again: Sacramento has not been great at home here this year, not like years past. So with a pick'em price, they certainly have the advantage, but I wouldn't count Dallas out as being that team that eventually locks up that number 60.
Great matchup out on the West Coast here. And let's also take a look at a playoff atmosphere that should take place on South Beach tonight with the Miami Heat taking on the Golden State Warriors. Now, you might find yourself saying the Heat trying to get out of the play-in rounds here and move up to a possible six seed here. The Golden State Warriors fighting for their lives just to be in the playoffs any way, shape, or form. The line opened up overnight here at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Joe, at a minus 1.5-point favorite for the Golden State Warriors. We're still seeing that 1.5, some other outlets up to as high as 2. A total of 218.5. The last stand over the 15 games here for the Warriors to get in. Or tonight, is it going to be the Miami Heat at home?
Yeah, well, it's again, check the lineup and the questionable tags there for Miami, who's in and who is out. This feels like a dead under to me here tonight. 218 over here. I think Miami is going to want to win this game, not by trying to outshoot anybody, but more like stifling the Golden State Warriors and not letting them get off early in this game. So I like Miami early, but I really like the full game under in this one as well. Expect Miami to slow this thing down to a crawl.
Remove that Bucks game tonight against the Lakers. That's a minus 8.5. We just went over the Dallas Mavericks and the Sacramento Kings, listed at 1.5. We just went over the Golden State Warriors and the Miami Heat, game listed at 1.5. Let's throw a little bit more wood onto that fire tonight. Why? The OKC Thunder taking on the New Orleans Pelicans in New Orleans. Opening line, minus 1, sits currently as the road team. OKC, a minus 1.5-point favorite. Razor-thin margins tonight. A 223 listed as the total. OKC trying to fight themselves back into that number one seed. And the Pelicans just trying to say, we ain't dropping into the in-play-in series rounds. We want to stay in that top 6. What gives tonight in your mind?
What gives is that we got we got limited games here tonight, Diane, but we got 4 games that mean an really awful lot to the teams involved in them here. So, which is what I love. And again, we don't have any obnoxious spreads except for the Laker one, which is kind of deserved anyway. But this one here it feels like OKC has slowed down a little bit, maybe running a little bit out of gas, trying to preserve. I mean, don't forget Chet Holmgren, hadn't played at all last year. So even he has admitted now over the last couple of weeks that it's tough. Like it's, they're trying to stay fresh. They're trying to stay relevant. I don't think the question is ever whether Denver is going to take their foot off the gas not to get the one. I think that question is valid here with OKC. How far are they willing to push the envelope in order to be able to sell out to get that top spot? I don't think they're going to, because I think they're going to lose tonight here to New Orleans. I think New Orleans is ready for this moment. Brandon Ingram was the question mark, right? I don't think it's going to matter one way or the other. I think they handle business in this one.
Yeah, take a look at the teams that are hot. The New Orleans Pelicans, winners of 8 of their past 10 games, including the 2-game win streak. The problem when you look at the top of the standings is you say, oh, OKC starting to fade. They're 7-3 in their last 10 ball games, which is a 70% win clip. And then you say, well, how are they doing against Denver? Denver's like, yeah, you know what? 9-1 in our last 10, 4 straight wins here. We just continue to hang on. It's almost soul crushing at this point when you look at it, saying, like, how good a basketball do we have to play? Do we have to play perfect basketball, 10-game win streaks to gain 1 game on the Denver Nuggets? It just might be that way. Let's take a look here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, the NBA odds to win the championship this year. And it feels a lot like UConn. Maybe it is the Northeast that's going to get it done in both the NBA and also in NCAA action. The Celtics at a plus 210 price. I want to start there right now because, again, I brought up UConn for the right reason. I think the Celtics are the best overall team in the NBA. But at this point in the season, I'm not betting the Celtics to win an NBA championship at a plus 210 price because they still have to play the remaining parts of the season. Injuries always creep in. Hot teams step into the NBA playoffs in the Eastern Conference. We see it all the time here. From your perspective, number one, do you think Boston is the best team in the NBA? Number two, would you take a plus 210 price point on them to win the NBA championship?
Like you said, we're kind of dealing with the UConn phenomena here, right? Yeah. Like, what do we do here? And listen, this is no different than the hype, Donnie, over the last couple of years for the Celtics, is it? We've always had this conversation here as of recently with this roster, which improved in the offseason after losing last year. We have this conversation every year. They're not the best team until they actually get over this hurdle here. And that hurdle is going to be the Denver Nuggets, who, by the way, are champions, still the champions, and are going to lock up a number one seed out West. To me, it's Denver is the best team in the league. Boston's got a lot on their shoulders and a lot to prove here if they're going to overtake and be considered at any point the best team in the NBA.
It sounds crazy when you lay it out, right? Because I've said this repeatedly throughout the season. I do think the Boston Celtics are the best team overall. But when you put them up against the Nuggets, and this saying again, I think the Celtics are a better team. Yeah. Who do you trust more if they match up against each other? I always find myself taking the Denver Nuggets. It's almost like I always know what I expect from Jokic and the Nuggets as opposed to the Celtics. Yep. Now, granted, it doesn't help that the Celtics had a 30-point lead last night and lost outright to the Atlanta Hawks the day we're talking about this, but it just rises up that way. If I ask you a quick question, 10-1s or higher, Knicks, Timberwolves, Mavericks, Sixers, does anybody get your attention there, Joe?
The Knicks. The Knicks do because they're surviving without big pieces. And when those pieces become available, I think this is going to be a very interesting team here that I don't know how many people are going to want to play early on in the playoffs.
Yeah, a lot of question marks, and that's what's fun. We talked about Marquette in college basketball, getting their best player back. Is that going to equate to victories, yep, and how well will he do? Same thing with the Knicks. Two all-stars on their team not playing, yep, basketball right now. The Philadelphia 76ers with an MVP that's due to come back. We're going to talk offensive linemen next, people. Don't go anywhere. It's the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hour number three rolling along right here on the early line. Having some fun, but we hit a lot of topics here. We know one of the biggest topics coming up is going to be the NFL draft, and we got a surprise for you. I'm Donnie Wrightside. He's Joe Ranieri, and the big man, I mean big man, in the middle is Tanner Bordellini, Wisconsin Badger offensive lineman. Now let's get this out here. 6'4", 303, 1,900 snaps, probably played a little jump around in the background, and my goodness, Joe, take a look at the lettuce from my guy here. You got an offensive line that's looking that sweet this morning. We're ready to go, Tanner. What's up, man?
Not doing well, guys. How are you?
Nah, doing fantastic, ready to rock and roll. We know you got a big process ahead of you here that, quite frankly, has already started. I'm always fascinated by this. After you get done with the season for the Badgers, what happens? What is the pre-draft process that you went through so far, Tanner?
So I went to the Sports Academy in Frisco, Texas. So immediately after the season, head straight there, start training right away. It's about three times a day, every day. So it gets pretty long. It's a grind, but really enjoyed it. Then you obviously go to the Senior Bowl after about a month and a half of training, play the game, then do really combine prep for another month, and then have the combine, then had another couple weeks of that same combine training and do pro day, and now just getting ready to play football again, which is really exciting.
It's got to be. I mean, it's got to be, right? You go from the season, right, to, bowl, now you got Senior Bowl, and I got it. So at what point do you start getting maybe a little overwhelmed with it? Because even when the season's over, you know what's coming up for you, didn't you?
Yeah, I think probably that two or three weeks right before the combine, it really starts to get like, wow, this has been a long time. You know, you're sitting there, you're training six times a week, every week, you know, not really doing much outside of that. And it kind of starts to catch up with you at that point. But really just kind of make sure you stay locked in. You know, you're really right there. You're about to cross the finish line, just making sure you get to the finish line. So that's all it really was. And then now you get a little more time to kick back, relax, reset, and then head back into the draft, obviously, coming up, and then rookie minicamp.
Oof. Tanner, everybody knows when you think about college football in the ground game, it's Wisconsin that comes to your mind and the dominance that they have at the offensive line. Talk to us how you made your way to Wisconsin here.
Yeah, so growing up, I grew up in a small town out of Wisconsin. So started getting recruited by a variety of schools, and then Wisconsin came into the picture. You know, talked to them, met the staff, met the players, felt like I really fit in great with the culture and the guys here. You know, you're going to be around that whole group a lot. If you're going to be – you better like the guys you're going to be around because you're going to spend a lot of time with them. So I really like that group, like that O-line group, and felt like it was the right place for me. Running the ball is obviously something we did a lot at a small school, so felt like it was a great fit.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. When you first came to Wisconsin, were you a guard? Were you – how did you – have you played them all while you were there?
Yeah, I played every single one while I was there. Played everything but left tackle in a game, even like extra tight end. So get a little – versatility on the resume, which is good. It's always fun to line up. Maybe I'll catch a pass this time. Never did, but it was good. I think it really gave me a better overall understanding of how to play football, you know, what the guys next to me need, what I need from them, and how to compliment my teammates so we can be better as a group.
Tackle eligible, certainly a big man's dream there, catching those touchdown passes. But I got to ask you a question about this. My team is the Philadelphia Eagles. I live just outside of Philadelphia. There's a guy named Jason Kelce that just retired, might be going down as the best center of all time. Now, you got a little kinship with him here. Talking about the three-cone drill, you actually beat his time here. He's thought to be one of the best movers of all time as an offensive lineman. How did you get ready for that three-cone drill? And my goodness, you beat his number here, Tanner.
Yeah, obviously short speed quickness is always something I've prided myself on having. So really just getting the pattern down, you know, an offensive line play, you really don't run a lot of three cones while on the field. So it's a little different kind of movement, a little different kind of steps, but getting the footwork down, once I got it down, I really felt really comfortable about, you know, what I was going to do, just making sure I did it at the combine. And then to see the result I got there was awesome. And to ever be mentioned in the same sentence as one of the all-time greats is a really cool thing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you spent all this time here at Wisconsin, right? And you're leaving, but boy, is the Big Ten going to look a little different next year, isn't it? Kind of, what was the buzz like when all of this was going on this year? What was it like? Were you going like, damn, I'm glad I'm out of here because this is over the top?
It's crazy. You know, you like look at it, it's like, damn, it's closer to the Big 20 now than the Big 10. But it's crazy. I mean, it's huge. It's good for the conference. I think it'll really, you know, bring a lot of better competition in. And I think it'll be great, but it's going to be different. It's going to look a lot different than it ever has. And I think, you know, flying all the way to the West Coast is going to be a little different for all these teams. You know, the time adjustment, if you're going all the way from the East all the way to the West, we'll see how that works out. I think that's probably the biggest concern with a lot of the guys there. But I think it'll be really, really good for the Big Ten overall.
Tanner, taking a look at the changing landscape in college football, a lot of new rules coming in, which includes the NIL. Now, you were there and probably participated in that. We always like to say you got to take care of your offensive linemen. Talk about the NIL structure of college football now moving forward in that changing landscape.
Yeah, it's really different. You know, I think a lot of guys come in, and the transfer portal is way more abundant than it used to be. You know, when you came in, you came with a group of 20 guys, and, you know, probably 15 of them would be there by the end of your senior year. Now guys, if they're not loving the playing time they get, they feel like they can get paid more somewhere else. That's kind of where they feel like they can get the best opportunity for them and their families. They'll go capitalize on that. So it's different. I think locker room-wise, you're seeing a lot more turnover. And a lot of older guys, you know, if you're lacking in a spot, we'll just go get a guy that can play right now, maybe rather than developing the young guys as much. But I think that's a common thing pretty much everywhere. And it's different, but I think, you know, for the player-wise, putting guys in the right spots, getting guys in the situations they want to be in, it benefits them in the long run.
So how did it work? Are you the only football player in the family? Do you come from a long line of football players? And were you always on the offensive line even through high school? This was you knew where you were going to be?
Yeah, so for me, I played both ways in high school. So played pretty much everything on defense except for safety. So that was fun. Mm-hmm. And then I played offensive line. So really knew that offensive line was probably going to be where I was at in college. Just had to get a little bigger. Started off at like 220 in high school. So had to gain quite a bit of weight. But obviously it went pretty well. And then I have a little brother that plays high school football right now. So hopefully he's on the same track. I know he really enjoys playing. And then my mom played D1 basketball at UW-Milwaukee. So I think that's probably where I get some of that advice. And dad played D3 baseball. I probably wanted to bring that up.
Look at that legacy action here. Yeah, so maybe more and more Bertolinis here that are going to go to Wisconsin. I'm always fascinated here, Tanner, by the actual draft process itself, in particular with the combine. Did you meet with a lot of football teams? Did you get asked some interesting questions? And how was your overall thought process throughout the combine and how it leads going into the NFL draft?
Good. I mean, it's a really long week while you're there, and they kind of make it challenging on you mentally, so you're kind of tired by the time you have to do all the workouts, because the last thing you do is the workout. A lot of meetings, a lot of interactions. The medical day is a really long day, but it was a really good opportunity to kind of have teams get to know me more as a person, get more comfortable with me, see if I fit in well with them, their culture, their beliefs. And I think I really enjoyed that I think I did well with all of that. And then the testing, I mean, it's a really long week. I think they set it up to be that way. So it's not where you can just come in, destroy the testing and then get interviewed. You know, you got to do all the hard stuff first and then do what you can to do. But yeah, really, really enjoyed that combine process.
Yeah, the combine's got to be a trip, right? Because you always got to be wondering, like, what do they want me to – why are they asking me this? What's going on? Like, how do you even prepare for that interview? Because it could – you know, a lot of times it could come from left field, and you're like, what is going on here? What was it like trying to prep for that?
I mean, you can only prep for so many questions. At the end of the day, you're going to get some of them that you've never heard catch you off guard. Like, I think some of the guys were like, how many basketballs can you fit on a school bus? I didn't get that one, but I was like, I don't know how I would even answer that. Like, what do you say? What's the right answer?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just things classic. Like that. Like, you can only prepare yourself for so much. And at the end of the day, I don't know what the purpose of that is, but it has to mean something to somebody. And I don't know.
Counter, going to the next one. That's a great question. That's a great question and a great answer.
What is the answer? Now I got to look it up. Exactly. Now I got to look it up.
Just decide to pick you up. Big bus, long bus, short bus, double-decker bus, all those additives in there. But getting ready to be in the NFL, what are you working on now from the college game into the pro game? Is it getting bigger? Is it getting faster? Is it getting stronger? Are there techniques that you have to worry about now? How are you doing that in the process of getting drafted here?
I think, you know, film study has been a really big part of it. You know, you watch the NFL tape, the NFL game, you're watching guys that are the best at the best of what they do. So, you know, you go from being in college where everybody is good to where now everybody was the best at what they did in college and they've gotten even better. So really learning the inside out, the details of the game, you know, working with Duke, he brought up a lot of really small details that you don't think may be the biggest factors, but all of a sudden you're going against some of the best, like Aaron Donald, Myles Garrett, and the tiniest of things matter, you know. An inch on your hand placement makes the biggest difference in the world. So really focusing on, you know, secondary moves, initial sets, what guys are really looking to do. It's been a really interesting change, I would say, especially in the speed of play and the level of play. But it's something I'm really excited about.
Looking back here on your 4 years or time, what would you say, what was the toughest defense that you faced? Like, when you knew it was going to make you better, but it was probably the most challenging defense every year that you had to go up against.
I would say probably the Ohio State defense. We've played them the past two seasons I've been here. And both times they've been really good. Had a lot of really very talented players on that side of the ball, and honestly both sides of the ball. And I think that makes for a really high caliber game where, you know, it's going to be tough, but the competition is going to be really good. You're going to be better for it. And if you really want to play in the NFL, those are the guys you're going to have to be going against week in, week out. So I think it's really good preparation for that.
When you think about Wisconsin, Tanner, obviously it's running backs, it's offensive linemen, it might be Barry Alvarez, but the one thing that we do know before the start of the fourth quarter, when jump around comes on, we always see the skill position guys getting after it. How do the big men react when jump around is playing at Camp Randall?
We love it. I mean, I always love when Camp Randall gets going. You know, you get some juice in there. Jump around always brings that. For us, if I'm playing, I'm usually too tired to be doing that. The young guys are all about it, but they'll be jumping around. When I was younger, I was about it, but now that I'm older, I'm like, I can't be spending energy on this. But the skill guys, I know they're big fans of it, and it's great. I think as long as it gets the energy going, that's all I can ask for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm laughing because it's usually the guys that don't have any mud on their uniform doing it. Is there? It kind of works out like the big old lineman going, oh, hell no, we ain't got time for this here, my man.
Now, we've got some guys on crutches, all of a sudden they're jumping around. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
That's great.
People getting all excited there at the right time. By the way, we can't let you get out of here. NCAA tournament right now, we were talking a little bit before we came on the air. Is your bracket, Tanner, already busted? Is that true?
Yeah, I picked Auburn to win. So obviously, if anybody else has been following that, it hasn't gone very well. So yeah, no, that sucked. But you know, it is what it is. Still fighting for my other final four spots. Got Creighton, Houston, and the UNC. So they're still alive. So we got some hope, but it really hurts to lose your champion in the first round. I will say.
Look, we know he's impartial right there. He didn't take Wisconsin to go all the way through, so the man is actually breaking it down as we speak. We love to see that. But also, thanks for joining us this morning. That's Tanner Bordellini, superstar offensive lineman for the Wisconsin Badgers, heading into the NFL draft. Thanks again, Tanner. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll be back to close it all down next, right here on The Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
One final segment here on a Tuesday show. 3 hours went by quick, and we kept you in the tune here. Why? NFL, the NBA, college basketball, college football, players going into the draft. It never stops here. But in this final segment, Joe Rainier, we always like to give something to the people. Been red hot as of late, and it continued last night with a +210 price on Domantas Sabonis to record a triple-double. So today, I'm going to let you go first, Joe Rainier. We, the people out here, want to know a bet tonight they might be able to secure a wager down on and win some money. Where are we going, Joe Rainier, for your best bet of the night?
Oh, I kind of like. We'll go to the association here. Let's tonight. And again, I'm looking at the under in this game here tonight with the Miami Heat. Listen, Miami has done a couple of things here down the stretch. They've ratcheted up the defense. They've been dealing with injuries. We know this. But they're going to dictate pace at home here against Golden State Warriors. Both teams battling, obviously. Miami battling for seeding, you know, Golden State's trying to save their season. I don't see this being a 130 to 120 type of game. I think this is going to be first one to 100, 105 wins. So I'm going to tell under the 218 in this one.
There you go. I'm actually going to go out to the West Coast tonight. Dallas Mavericks and the Sacramento Kings. It's a tough game. It's a 1.5-point line, but I'm going to take the favorite, and that's the Sacramento Kings. Just simplicity here. Dallas is going to be on the road after a back-to-back. The Sacramento Kings are going to stay home after a victory against the Philadelphia 76ers. A great matchup with a lot of seeding here on the line. I'm going to lean towards the home team, Sacramento Kings. The other tough games tonight, that Heat-Warriors game. It's a -2 here as a favorite for the Golden State Warriors. The Oklahoma City Thunder game, they're favored by 1.5 points. And again, if LeBron James played against the Milwaukee Bucks, we'd probably be looking at a line closer to 4.5 and 5 points. But an exciting show across the board. And you know what? Joe Rainier is going to be back with me tomorrow once again for the early line. Boom. Guests, and more guests, keeping in the know, having a good time talking sports, winning wagers. Who says no? It's what we do on the early line. So join us tomorrow once again, bright and early, 8 a.m. Eastern, for another edition of the early line. Enjoy the rest of your day.